This year is brought to you by TorahWeb.org.
Good morning, everybody. Shalom Aleichem. Agud Tevach. When I was a little boy, before Bar Mitzvah, my father, Zichron Lebracha, was a rabbi, and he used to get newspapers in the mail that he didn't subscribe to. They sent them to all the rabbis. So I remember before my Bar Mitzvah, I used to read the book reviews, and the JWB Circle, Jewish Welfare Board, used to have once a month or twice a year or something, I forgot already. So they used to have book reviews. I used to read them as a little boy. So I remember there was a book that came out at that time, The Last of the Just. It was a historical novel about the way life probably was during the days of the second Beis Hamikdash. So the author, and it's supposed to be all based on Josephus, the history part. So the author describes the way that people came from all over the world, from Chutz La'aretz, even if you're not obligated to, but everybody came to bring the Korban Pesach. And they hadn't seen each other in 6 years. The last time they were together were 6 months, a couple of months since Shavuos. Pesach, Shavuos, Sukkot, they hadn't seen each other for a long time. So they would finish the Seder. And after they would finish the Seder, they would visit each other and carry on conversations the whole night. So the conservative rabbi who wrote the book review said, this is a mistake. It's against the Pasuk in Chumash. It says in Korban Pesach, Parshas Bo, Al Yetzi Ish Me Pesach Pesach Boker. No one's allowed to leave the house until the morning. So there cannot be that in Josephus, it says like that. As a little boy, I knew that that was a mistake. That pasuk is a hayroa shor. That's not a din l'doros. There are a lot of dinim in Chumash that were only intended to be lo hayroa shor. It says when you eat the Korban Pesach in Mitzrayim, you had to eat it, masech mechagur, na'lechem ba'aglechem ma'akelchem b'retchem b'yetchem. That didn't apply to doros. That was a hayroa shor. Once in the history of the world, there are a lot of dinim like that. They were only intended as a Hayroa Shah. The Rambam writes in the Sefer HaMitzvahs that he's only going to list 613 mitzvahs that apply throughout all the future generations. If something's only Hayroa Shah, like you're not allowed to leave over the mon till the morning. That's only if the mon would fall down now, there wouldn't be a din that you're not allowed to leave it over to the mon. There was a Hayroa Shah for the 40 years that the mon fell down in the mid, but they weren't allowed to leave it to the morning. So the Rambam said that doesn't count as a mitzvah. Rashi writes in his opening comment on Parsha Sav, he quotes from the Tanakh, Mei, Loshen Sav, Loshen Zir is Miyad al Doros. The term mitzvah is a technical term that only applies to a din that's binding throughout all the future generations. There was a famous Hasidic Rebbe, the Kedushas Levi, Rabbi Levi Yitzchok Berditcheva. He was a Mechutna of the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Baal HaTanya. So he writes in his Sefer, much of his Sefer on Chumash is all Hasidus and Kabbalah, which is way above my head, I don't understand. But a lot of times he writes Pashut Pshat in the Pasuk. So he writes on the Psukim in Parshas Boy. It says that on Erev Pesach, once in the history of the world, on Erev Pesach of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the people had to knock on the next door neighbor's doors and ask for matonis. So it says the Bnei Yisrael also kidvar Moshe. They did as Moshe Rabbeinu instructed them. Then there was a din that had to bring Korban Pesach. Usually Korban Pesach, you have to have a Mizbech and it has to be in the Beis HaMikdash. Here there was a Hayroa Shor. There was no Beis HaMikdash and there's no Mizbech, so they put the dam, Ashtem Zuz, the Allah Mashkov. The Gemara has a discussion. Did they burn the Emurim or not? Normally in a Korban you burn the Emurim. So there was a lot of Hayroa Shor involved, but in principle the din of Korban Pesach is a mitzvah to Doros. So then the Pasuk says, Bnei Yisrael also, Kasha Tziva Hashem is Moshe. Loshen Tzivui only applies to a mitzvah that's Noig L'doros. The mitzvah with respect to knocking on the next door neighbor's doors, the Goyim, Pesach Matan, that was only once in the history of the world. So it doesn't say over there, Bnei Yisrael also Kasha Tziva. It says, Kedvar Moshe, as Moshe Rabbeinu had instructed them. In the Chumash you can tell when it's a mitzvah to Doros, when it's a Hayroa Shor. By the Bnei Tzalofchad, there's a Din Chumash, a girl who has no brothers. When the father dies, there are no sons to get the Yerusha, so the girl is not allowed to marry out of her shevet. How come there are people today where they only have daughters, they have no sons, and the daughters do marry out of the shevet? The answer is, we don't know who's from what shevet, okay. But even if we would know, that's a Hayroa Shor, the Gemara said. That din only applied the first 14 years after they crossed over the Yarden. Eretzel didn't have the full Kedusha until after 14 years after they crossed over there. And it says in Yoshua, it says in Sefer Yoshua, it took 7 years to finish conquering the land, because it's Palestine, as they used to call it, is a link that joins together Europe, Asia, and Africa, and whoever controls that area could possibly control the whole region, all the three continents. The Nazis wanted to control Palestine. That's when they started to lose the war, when they were dropping bombs in Palestine at that time. And Napoleon wanted to control Palestine. Whoever controls Palestine can possibly, if they're interested in it, controlling the whole area. So the Psukim say it took 7 years to conquer Eretz Yisrael, because there were 31 kings, Lamed Aleph Malachim, had palaces in Eretz Yisrael. And it took another 7 years till they divided the Shvatim, and then to the Mishpachas, and then to Yechidim. So the Chalukah, the dividing of the land, that was the completion of the Kibush of Eretz Yisrael. The Mekadosh was the Kibush of Eretz. So this din, that a girl who gets Yerusha is not allowed to marry out of her tribe, only applied the first 14 years, when they completed the Chalukah of Eretz Yisrael, and each Shevet had its area, and all the whole area was in the hands of the people for not Shevet, then they can sell a karkos, they can do whatever they want after that. The din doesn't apply today. The din didn't apply after the first 14 years of his only Hayru Ashur. That's how the Gemara had a tradition. And nonetheless, the Pasuk says that B'nai Salofcha married Kasha Tziva Hashem Es Moshe. It says Kasha Tziva. If it's only a Hayru Ashur, they married cousins of theirs. So if it's only Hayru Ashur, how come it says Kasha Tziva? So this motivated the Chachamim and the Gemara to make a very surprising statement that the B'nai Salofcha weren't permitted to marry out of their Shevet. The whole Shiloh was brought up. What should happen if a girl gets Yerusha? Can she marry out of a Shevet? There's going to be an area in Eretz Yisrael that belongs to Shevet Reuven. And there are people not from Shevet Reuven have real estate there. So the whole Shiloh was brought up because of the B'nai Salofcha, but they didn't have to observe that then. They were told, "La'tor b'enechem k'dayen al anashim," you can marry anybody you want. So that's what the Chazal said, the Pasuk says, B'nai Salofchad married whomever they wanted, as Moshe Rabbeinu gave, they followed the din l'daris, kasher tziv Hashem as Moshe. By them there was no Hayru Ashur, because that's what the Pasuk says, kasher tziv Hashem as Moshe. We have in Chumash, we have dinim that annoyed l'daris, and some dinim are Hayru Ashur. You have to know which is what. So the Rebbe who teaches Chumash to the young children should explain. Then we have Minhagim. The Ramah has a collection of Chuvas of Ramah. So in one of the Chuvas he writes that even though we have a principle with respect to a Takana de Rabbanan, Dovash of Minyan, Tzoch Minyan Achala Hatiro, whenever the Chachamim establish an Issa de Rabbanan, there are many Issurim de Rabbanan. Whenever they establish an Issa de Rabbanan, even though it was introduced for a specific reason, now you live in a generation where the whole reason doesn't apply. So the halacha says that the din de Rabbanan still applies until you have Tzoch Bez Nachal HaTiro. Dov Shem Minyan Tzoch Minyan Nachal HaTiro. The Issa de Rabbanan doesn't fall apart by itself just because the reason no longer applies. The Gzera de Rabbanan still applies. So the Ramo has it truly. He says that that doesn't apply to Minhagim. Whenever you have a Minig and the reason for the Minig doesn't apply anymore, so the whole Minig doesn't apply anymore. Rashi in the first Perek and Beitza says Beferish like that. Rashi interprets the Gemara. The Gemara says like that. The Gemara has a discussion at the time that they still, we now follow a Luach Kavua. We know in advance, if Mashiach doesn't come, we know in advance in another 1,000 years what day of the week Rosh Hashanah is going to be, what day of the week Pesach is going to be, and so on. But in the earlier generations, they didn't know in advance. They didn't know from one month to the other. They had to wait till witnesses would come and testify that they saw the new moon, and the Bezin would declare it as the Rosh Chodesh. So at that time, there's what we call a Sveik of the Yomah. The people weren't sure, unless they lived close to Yerushalayim, had no telephones, they had no emails. So how are they going to know when the Bezin Yerushalayim declared Rosh Chodesh? So they had to send Shluchim by horseback to go notify all the people. They had no telephones. They had to notify all the people when Rosh Chodesh was. So that's why they instituted Yontem Sheni Shel Golias. So the Gemara has a dispute, according to Rashi's interpretation of the Gemara, Bizman Shekitcho Piharia, when there was a real Sveika de Yoima. So the Gemara has a dispute. What was the nature of Yontem Sheni Shel Golias? Was it a Takana de Rabbanan, or was it only a Minig? Why wasn't it a Sveika de Raisa Luchumra? So the Netziv, in his commentary on Chumash, says it was never a real Sveika de Raisa Luchumra, because they never observed Yom Kippur 2 days, even when there was a real Sveika de Yoima. They never observed Yom Kippur. You can say, well, Yom Kippur, people can die if they're going to fast 2 days in a row. Okay, but they didn't even tell the people not to do malacha for 2 days on Yom Kippur. There never was a, why not? So the Netziv says, because we have a tradition that It's very, very, very rare, extremely rare, that Elul has 30 days. The Gemara says once in 500 years, Elul had 30 days. Now we have the calendar, Elul never has 30 days. But once in 500 years, you're not mechuyev to be choshish. If the odds are 500 to 1, so if you don't know whether it's one day, you don't know whether Rosh Hashanah was on one day or the next day, so for Rosh Hashanah, Nishgefelach, so you tell the people, observe Rosh Hashanah 2 days in a row. But for Yom Kippur, to fast, some people, it'll become a suffix sakana, that they can get sick from fasting 2 days. So they never instituted. For sure, it's not a sveika deraisa l'chumra. Even when there was a sveika d'yoma, it wasn't a real sveika d'yoma. Ador ha-samach l'nisen, whether other sheni, whatever it is, when you have a shana mover, Ador ha-samach l'nisen is a rube de rube. Is 29 days, and Elul Ruba de Ruba is 29 days. So Rashi learns in the Gemara that there is a dispute whether the observance of Yom Tov Sheni Shel Golias, when there was a real Sveika D'Yoma, was that a Din de Rabban, or was that a Minig? What's the difference? The difference is, what if it comes a generation where there's no longer a Sveika D'Yoma? If it's a Din de Rabbanon, so that's a klal. Whenever the Chachamim make a takana, so you have to continue to observe it, even after the reason for the takana doesn't apply, unless you have another bezin to repeal it. Bezin achal hatira. But if it's only a minig, whenever the reason for the minig doesn't apply, the minig falls apart. That's how Rashi says in the Gemara. The Ramon, the Tshuva doesn't quote the Rashi, writes on his own. Chaim Moshe also, I think the very last Tshuva in his, he published 3 volumes during his lifetime. Of Jews. The 3rd volume was printed in the middle of the Second World War. And he writes an interesting comment in the introduction. One can wonder, why am I spending money to print the tshuva? This money can go to save some Jews' lives. They would bribe Nazis to release Jews. So isn't it pikuach nefesh? He says that the fact that the Jewish people learn and they print tshuvas, that's also saving lives. That's what saved the Jewish people throughout all the generations. And he feels that it's important not to use all the money to save lives by paying off Nazis, but part of it has to go for printing svarim, and his tshuva is ataka important. So in his last tshuva, he also writes like that, that if you have a minig for a certain that was introduced for a certain reason, the reason no longer applies, that the whole minig falls apart automatically. You don't need a bezin to declare that is the case. Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch, when I was growing up, my father had never had any svarim by Rabbi Hirsch in the home. I think at that time, they were all in German. Hardly anything was translated into English yet. But he never had. So when I was a student in yeshiva, I stayed in the dormitory when I was learning for smicha. So one of my roommates, we had 3 beds, and there were 5 people had the keys to the bedroom. So it was kol hakodim mizocha. Whoever came first, I was younger than the others. They were all dating. So I was always going to sleep early, and so the others were always coming later. So whenever someone came late, and there was no bed that was available, they would sleep in some other bed. They would find a free bed on the floor. So one of my roommates at that time had Chorev, the book by Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch. So I remember reading some of the essays at that time. And so he has an essay where he points out in Chumash there's a din. When the karbonas are divided into 2 categories, kachim kachim and kachim kalim, higher level kedusha and lower level kedusha. The kachim kachim have a restricted time; you can only eat it yom v'layla at chatzos, and it's restricted who can eat it and where you can eat it. Only kohanim can eat it, zichre kohuna. Only the male kohanim, a bas kohen, is allowed to eat truma, but she's not allowed to eat kachim kachim. It has to be eaten in the azara. Can't eat it even in Yerushalayim. Kachim kalim have Shnei Yamim V'Layla Echad, you have a longer period of time, and any Jewish person who's Tohar can eat it, and the Mokam Achila is Yerushalayim. So Rabbi Hirsch points out that just like the more Mekudesh a Korban is, and the more restricted the Zman Achila is, and you have to be careful, it'll become Nifsal Balina. If you leave it over too long, it'll become Pusl. So he says, the same is true regarding Minhagim. You have to check over all of the Minhagim, whether the reason still makes sense, that the minig still apply in our generation. Whenever you have a minig that doesn't really make sense in our generation, you should really do away with it. You have to be careful, because just like the more mekudesh the korban is, so the more time sensitive it is. If you leave it over Yom V'Layla at Chatzos, it'll be nifsal balina. So the same is true regarding minhagim, the holy minhagim, but you have to be careful not to keep the minig on after it's no longer sensible. I used to daven a Broyan shul for when I first moved into Washington Heights. So Rabbi Schwab always used to learn kids who Shulchan Aruch after Shacharis. He used to learn one or two Sifim, and another person said Kaddish, because they don't allow more than one person to say Kaddish at a time. So sometimes there are five Avelim, they're not enough Kaddishim to go around. So he would learn Sifah too in kids who Shulchan Aruch, and then one of the Avelim would say Kaddish to Rabbanon after that. So I remember he once said over that many Yekis have a minig that on Pesach they don't eat chicken. What's up? They only eat flesh. Why don't they eat chicken? Because they used to feed the chicken kernels of grain. And Tosfos discusses if you just fed the chicken before you shecht it, so the kernel of grain will not be digested yet. So you can have a kernel of grain in the stomach of the chicken, and the enzymes in the stomach are not coming out. The chicken is dead, so it doesn't produce any more enzymes. So they're not going to be broken down to their component parts. So you can, Tosfos described, you can cook your chicken and then you open up, you eat the chicken, you'll find a kernel of grain that became chametz. So it's going to be ashal, the chametz on Pesach has been mashehu. It's not bottled b'shishim. So that's why they had a minig, many had a minig, not to eat chicken. So he said in shul that the minig no longer applies because the farmers do not feed kernels of grain to the chicken anymore. That's way too expensive. They give them maize. They give them corn on the cob. They give them quantity. Corn is only kidneys. It's only a minig. So you're not, there's no dinner mashu. Kidneys, you don't even eat shishim as long as the bottle berayif. So you just take out the kernels of corn and you eat the rest of the chicken. That's not a shalom. So he said, that's an halacha. Whenever you have a minig, and the reason for the minig doesn't apply anymore, so the whole minig falls apart by itself. In Shulchan Aruch, they have a minig that a woman has to go to mikveh, has to make sure that no chatzitz is in her mouth. So if you eat meat or chicken, so sometimes it gets caught in between the teeth and it takes a long time till you get it out. So the minig is that if a woman has to go to mikveh that night, she doesn't eat flesh before she goes to the mikveh to make sure it doesn't get caught in between the teeth. Now the practice in many locations is that they insist that all the women should floss their teeth. So when it will become more accepted, maybe it's already accepted all over, when it will become more accepted that in all the mikvahs all over they'll insist on flossing, so then the minig will fall apart by itself. You're not obligated to observe that minig of not eating chicken before you go to mikveh if the reason doesn't apply anymore. By minhagim, if it doesn't apply, so the minig falls apart by itself. I remember when I was a student in the yeshiva, so Rav Shach was writing letters to the Talmidim all over the world. So somebody, I don't know who, somebody hung up all of Rav Shach's letters in the Beis Medrash whenever he sent out a letter. So he heard them. The letters that they hung up would usually be about covering more ground. He was complaining, why do they only cover 60 blot a year? 60 blot a year, halavai, they should cover 6 blot a year. They go so slowly now, it's ridiculous. He was complaining that they only cover 60 blot a year. And he kept on writing letters. Every time he put out another letter, someone would hang it up. I don't know who got it, they would hang it up. And now, during his lifetime, he published several volumes of his collected letters. So he had printed all those letters that he used to hang up in the Beis Medrash about covering ground, the Rabbeim should cover more ground. So then they hung up another letter. For many years, the Mizrahi in Eretz Yisrael would join the coalition government if they would be interested in joining with them. And they would have a say. They would have a say a little bit. And the Aguda always went with the Shita, you're not allowed to join the coalition government, it's Yehori Valyavar, because the government at that time was doing such scandalous things. They were cutting off the pays of the children from the Sephardic community. A lot of things were terrible at that time. So the expression that they used was that it's Yehori Valyavar. You're not allowed to join the coalition government. Until one fine day, Rabbi Eliezer Shach belonged to the Aguda, and he announced that he's organizing Degel HaTorah, another party, and Degel HaTorah is going to join the coalition government. So Rabbi Moshe Sternbuch, who's still alive now, L'orech Yamim Shonim Tavis, he was a young whippersnapper at that time. So he said, he was tumbling against Rabbi Shach. How can you join the coalition? But the Gedolim in the previous generation said it's Harag Vayavar. So Rav Shach felt apparently very uncomfortable coming out attacking, responding to this young Talmud Chacham. So instead of responding to him, say, Etzach Gemacht Nishlissendik, that someone attacked him. So he wrote a letter to his relative. He was related to Rabbi Baron Kotler. Baron Kotler had passed away already. So he sent a letter to Rabbi Shneur Kotler, the son of Rabbi Baron Kotler, explaining why he took this position. So he writes in the letter, a letter in Hebrew, and it's in his handwriting. We knew what his handwriting was like from the previous letters that someone always used to hang up. So they hung up this letter too. So he says, we have a tradition that whenever one is in a dilemma is a word in English that means all the alternatives that you have are no good. Whatever you're going to, you have to do something, you have to take a position. Whatever position you're going to take, it's going to be an aveira. So sometimes, the Gemara in Erev and Daf Kuf has a long discussion. What do you do when you have a dilemma? The Mishnah in Zvachim has a discussion. You brought two different korbanos on the Beis HaMikdash. One is a korban that needs two zrikas, one is a korban that needs four zrikas. One needs two zrikas, one needs one zrika. So if you're going to do zrikas adam too many times on the one that needs less, you'll violate Baal Tosef. You're going to do fewer zrikas than you need. And the dam from the two korbanos got mixed up. It got mixed up into one kli. So what do you do? If you're going to do, let's say, one zrika, two zrikas. If you're going to do one zrika, you'll violate Baal Tigra on the korban that needed two zrikas. If you do two zrikas, you'll violate Baal Tosef on the korban that only needs one zrika. So it's a machlokes hatanaim in the Mishnah. So one of the considerations is, it's not the sole consideration, one of the considerations in that Mishnah is that shei v'al tasa orif. If you violate Baal Tigra, that'll be b'shei v'al tasa. You'll only do one zrika. If you do two zrikas on the korban, I need only one zrika, you'll be violating Baal Tosef b'kum b'yaseh. So that's one consideration, that shei v'al tasa orif. The lesser of the two evils is to violate the aveira b'shei v'al tasa passively as opposed to actively. But that's not the sole consideration. You don't always say shei v'al tasa orif. So Rabbi Yisrael Shachs wrote a letter to his relative, Rabbi Shneur Kotler, and he had them hanging up in all the yeshivas. He didn't print it in the newspapers. He made believe that private letter, but he had them hanging up in all the yeshivas, that we have a tradition from our Rabbeim, it means from the Gemara, and from the Gdolim and Chaim Moser in Europe, dealt with non-religious Jews. He did a lot of politics, and he never had this attitude. That's everything you see. You're hearing about Yavar, you never make a compromise. Sometimes you have to do under the circumstances. You have to pick the lesser of the two evils. Sometimes more than two evils, three evils. They're all no good. You have to pick whatever is the least of all of the evils. So that's what, that was at the Mizrahi, that was the position of Mizrahi all the time. They joined the coalition government way before. And the Aguda was upset about that. Why, how can they support the coalition government that doing Duraim HaAsurim? So after many years, Rabbi Eliezer Shach said, under the circumstances, the lesser of the two evils is that you should join the coalition. At least a little bit will be accomplished. You have a say a little bit in what the government does. So that's, you can't establish l'doiros what to do based on a hayro hashoah. That's because you're faced with a dilemma. People point out, when in Toronto, there's a nice Jewish community in Toronto for many years, and they always had separate high schools for boys and for girls. So one fine day, a group joined together and they established a co-ed high school. And they said, it's patterned after Maimonides, the day school that Rabbi Soloveitchik established in Boston. So someone came and they told Rabbi Soloveitchik that they just established a co-ed school, a co-ed high school in Toronto, pattern after Maimonides. They said, what are you talking about? How is it pattern after Maimonides? Maimonides was the only day school in the whole New England. When he came to America, there was no day school for the Jewish people in New England. Maybe other places. They said, if he would have had insisted on having separate for boys and girls, they would never have agreed to send their children. And Ramaz also, the clientele that they're dealing with, quite a few of them, if the schools would be separate, they wouldn't send their children to a Jewish school. They'd rather send them to a Goyish public school. So under those circumstances, you're faced with a real dilemma. Should you insist on having separate schools and you won't have any Jewish students coming? No one will come to the school. So they say, under the circumstance, he had no choice. He had to make it co-ed. I remember when Rabbi Meir Tursky, the grandson of Rabbi Soloveitchik, he had his first child, so it was a boy. So he had a pigyon ben, Soloveitchik Soloveim. But Rabbi Troitsky's wife was not a Levi. He's not a Levi either. His wife was not a Levi. So they needed a pinyon ben. So remember Rabbi Soloveitchik, and they served a chicken meal by the pinyon ben. Remember, so they put me at the head table. Professor Tversky, the grandfather of the baby, was sitting to my right, and Rabbi Soloveitchik was sitting to my left. Rabbi Soloveitchik was very old already, and he couldn't cut the chicken, so I cut it, and I kept on dropping the chicken in the plate. He was ready. In the later years, he wasn't well at all. So Professor Tversky is sitting to my right, and he's asking me that for many years I had big Talmid Chachamim teaching Gemara in Maimonides, and now they're retiring, or they passed away, but I forgot already what the whole story was. So could I recommend somebody strong in learning to go teach Gemara in Maimonides in Boston? So I told him, the truth is that you're not going to get somebody good. The only people who will apply for the job are people who are weak in learning, because the boys are strong. They don't want to go teach in a co-ed high school. So don't fool yourself, you're not going to get somebody good. So he says, I always thought that I knew my father-in-law all the years, and I didn't really know what his position was on the co-ed school till after Mrs. Soloveitchik passed away, and then Rabbi Soloveitchik moved in. He didn't want to live by himself. He moved in with the Tverskys. So he said that it's not really right to have a co-ed high school. In Europe, they never had such a thing. So he said, under the circumstance, that they had no choice. It was a kula bishas satrak. That was the lesser of the two evils. But he said that now he's already getting old. He used to go to the high school every week. Whenever he would be there in Boston, he would go to supervise everything. He says he's getting old already. He was already getting very old. He was very weak at that time. But he said already a few years before, he said he's getting old and he can't supervise the school anymore. So he wants them to raise money. It's going to cost much more money. He wants them to raise money to have separate high school for the boys, separate high school for the girls. So Professor Tversky told me they're in the process of raising the money and I should send them a good boy and tell them that they're planning to separate the school. So I sent them a very good boy. He's still there. A big Talmid Chacham, and it made a big difference in the school, but they never raised enough money to separate the school. So this fellow went, and he stuck over there, and they didn't separate the schools. So when they told Rabbi Soloveitchik about this new co-ed high school in Toronto that was patterned after Maimonides, I said, what do you mean, it's not patterned after Maimonides? They never had a co-ed school in Toronto. He made a co-ed school. There was no education at all. There was nothing. That was the first day school in whole New England, he said. So he had no choice, but it doesn't apply there. There's a famous tshuva, the Mishnah says in Moed Katan that you're not allowed to take a haircut on Chol HaMoed. So the Pashto says it applies, Tesa says it applies to shaving as well. So the Nadi Behuda, who was a prominent rabbi in the 1700s, Nadi Behuda has a tshuva, and he says it's permissible to shave, and he has a reason that he's not going to explain. Mitam hakamus. He has a hidden reason that he doesn't want to reveal why he thinks it's permissible to shave on Chol HaMoed. So the Chasam Sofer, as a teenager, met the Nadi Behuda. It's an interesting history that the Chasam Sofer was a Talmud of Rav Nosson Adler. Rav Nosson Adler lived in Germany, but he didn't go for all the minhagim. So he davened in Nusach Ari, he davened in Havara Sfaradit, and he had different minhagim. He thought you should duchen every day. Everything was different. So they chased him, so the Ekkers chased him out of town. They chased him out of Frankfurt, because not following their minhagim. Literally, they chased him out of town. So the Chasam Sofer, as a young child, left his parents' home, because when the Chasam Sofer was bar mitzvah, he was very, very talented in learning. So he said, don't shtickle Torah. His father was a balabos, so his father couldn't prepare anything for him. So he prepared his own shtickle Torah. So the shtickle Torah, he said over something that his great-grandfather had printed in a sefer, Koset Sushuas, on the Zikin, and he shlugged it up, and he gave his own explanation. So the father didn't know right from wrong. So the father slapped him in public, the little kid, and he said, Shegetz, Pisha, you're disagreeing with Delta Zeta. How do you have the chutzpah to disagree? You're just bar mitzvah. So his Rebbe was there by the bar mitzvah, Nasnan. So he asked the father, what are you slapping the kid? The kid is right and your great-grandfather is wrong. Kid knows what he's talking about. So Nasan Adler told him, he recommended he should leave his parents' home. Because every time he's going to ask a kasha on Rashi, on Tosis, on the Rambam, on the Gemara, the father's going to give him a slap. Up the courage, shake it. You're not allowed to ask any kasha. The only way to learn is by asking kashas and working out what's going on. So he left his father's home. Nasnadla had a daughter, but it wasn't for that purpose. They weren't the same age. She didn't marry some sefer. So he left his father's home in order to learn better. So then when they chased Rav Nasnadla out of Frankfurt, he went along with him. So the story continues that when they came near Prague, they didn't cross over the bridge yet, so both Rav Nasnadla with the Chassam Sofer as a young child, they were on the bridge, on the other side of the bridge from Prague. So Rav Nasnadla sent the Chassam Sofer as a child to, they had no mail delivery over the bridge, so he sent him to deliver letters. He wanted to talk and learning with the Nerdy Behuda. So the Chassam Sofer met the Nerdy Behuda when he was a teenager. So the Chassam Sofer writes in his tshuva, I know what the secret reason is. Why did it? The Nadi Behuda writes, you're allowed to shave on Chol HaMoed. Today we assume it's permissible to shave for a different reason, because it's an oinus the muchach. The Gemara says, let's say someone was in prison, or someone was sick in the hospital, or he was in Medina Sayam, he was coming back by boat, and it took him so long, and there's no barber on the boat. So he's going to come Yantif, he's going to look awful. So if he comes back on Chol HaMoed, since he was honest, he wasn't able to take a haircut, he wasn't able to shave, to trim his beard before Yom Tov, so wherever it's an oinus that everybody is aware of, so then you're permitted to shave and to take a haircut in prison. They had no barbers, so if they released a person from prison on Chol HaMoed, or he got out of the hospital on Chol HaMoed, he wasn't able to take a haircut before, so we allow. So today, we consider it an oinus that everybody knows about. Everybody comes to shul the first night of Yom Tov, and everybody's clean shaven. Those who have no beard, they're clean shaven. Then it comes Chol HaMoed, everybody knows that you weren't able to shave the beard that didn't grow yet. That's an earnest that everybody understands. So that's what Moshe Feinstein writes in his Sefer. And Rav Soloveitcher used to say it like that, that you're allowed to shave on Chol HaMoed today because it's an earnest the muchach. Then Rav Moshe Feinstein at the end of the tshuva recommends that he thinks that you still shouldn't shave because what are people going to say? Rav Soloveitcher says, what do you mean? But if you're allowed to shave, it's a mitzvah to shave on Chol HaMoed. So now it's a different story. But at that time, the time during the lifetime of Nadi Behuda, so the Chassam Sofer writes in his tshuva, I'll tell you what the secret reason is, that the Nadi Behuda, and he lived in the big city Prague, that was on the cutting edge of everything, all like New York City, people doing crazy things. So a lot of the Jews were shaving with a razor. That's not permissible. So Nadi Behuda felt, there's only an Issa Deraisa if you shave with a razor once a week, because the hair will be significant length, so then it's called hashchosa. But if you shave every single day with a razor, there's hardly any hair. So then the Nadi Behuda is of the opinion that's not a biblical prohibition. So the whole prohibition of shaving a Chol HaMoed is only with the Rabbanan. So you're going to tell the people, don't shave a Chol HaMoed, wait till after Yom Tov. No, but we know they're going to shave with a razor. So he said, shave a Chol HaMoed, so it'll only be an issur de Rabbanan. He didn't want to be mefarsim the reason, because the Balabat were in violation of the din. They were shaving with a razor. But the Chassam Sofer said, that's the real reason why, and that that heta doesn't apply to us. So a lot of times, like Rav Shach was faced with a dilemma. If you don't join the coalition, the government's going to do whatever they don't please. If you will join the coalition, it looks scandalous. You're part of the government that's doing these terrible things, but at least you get your way in some things. So whenever you have a dilemma, you have to choose the lesser of the two evils. So that's what the Nadi Behuda chose to do. That's what Rav Soloveitcher chose to do when he established Maimonides. So you can't always follow, can't always say, you're founding a co-ed day school in Toronto following the pattern of Maimonides. That's not the same thing. It's totally different. Then a lot of times, we have a situation where we're not able to fulfill a mitzvah b'shlei Musa. So we do the mitzvah shalom b'shlei Musa. It's better to do a mitzvah shalom b'shlei Musa than not to do the mitzvah at all. So for many years, nobody was putting tchelis in the tzitzis because we lost the tradition, what is the tchelis? And in recent years, there are people who think that they did discover what the tchelis is. So the Beis HaLevi writes in his tshuvas that if a person will wear tzitzis, if he has tchelis available and he doesn't use it, he thinks that that's a violation of Bal Tigra. And the Mishnah Berurah also has a little bit like that. He doesn't talk about tchelis specifically, he talks about any mitzvah b'shlei Musa. If you do shalom b'shlei Musa, that'll be a violation of Bal Tigra. Rashi and Chumash says if you have tefillin, you only put in three parshas, you don't put all the four parshas in, that'll be Bal Tigra. The Beis Halevi quotes a Rashba, he thinks that that's not Bal Tigra, he just not put in three parshas, the tefillin are not kosher. So he didn't fulfill the mitzvah. Bal Tigra is only, if you want mekayim the mitzvah, shelo b'shleim usam. So there is certain leniency, sometimes there's a leniency, if you can't, if you don't have tchelus available. So the Beis Halevi says, we're all walking around with that, say, doicha loy sasi. You want to fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis, we don't have tchelus. So we're all in violation of Bal Tigra. So ese doicha loy sasi, you're allowed to violate Bal Tigra in this circumstance. Others argue if you don't have the ability to put in, if you don't have tchelus at all, so then maybe there's no Bal Tigra. Maybe it's only Bal Tigra if you have the ability and you don't choose to do like that. So usually there's a din. Usually there's a din that whenever it's possible to fulfill a mitzvah b'shleim musa, you shouldn't fulfill shalom b'shleim musa. So we say, but my family tradition is my father, my grandfather, my great grandfather, all the way back for many centuries, no one would. They didn't have any tchelus. That's why they didn't do it. You can't argue we're in violation of the minhag. That's not a minhag. If you don't have the ability to fulfill a mitzvah b'shleim musa, so you still fulfill shalom b'shleim musa. But you shouldn't perpetuate that. That's not right to perpetuate it. Also, take for example, for 10 years, Rabbi Soloveitchik lived in Boston. He was the Rabbi Maria Synagogue in Manhattan, on 80th Street and Broadway. The diamond merchants from Antwerp made their own minyan. That was called Beis HaKnesses Maria. It was in the middle of those 10 years that he started his weekly shiur, the Tuesday night shiur, that businessmen who had to come into New York in the middle of the week, they would always come, some of them who were interested in learning, you have to be in New York on Tuesday to attend the Tuesday night shiur. They would go back to Europe, they would go back wherever they lived, out of town. But they had to be in New York for the Tuesday night shiur that Rav Soloveitchik gave. So for 10 years, between 50 and 1950, 1960 approximately, so he was the rabbi in the Maria Shul, but he never moved to Manhattan, so he used to stay by others. And they lived on the higher floors in the apartment building, so they would rely on Amir al-Nachri to go in the elevator. Amir al-Nachri is only midrabbanan to ask a guy to push the elevator button. And even if you'll push the button itself, most of the poskim hold that it's only an isa derabbanan, not an isa deraisa. So that's the klal. The shus, but makam mitzvah is mutter. To ask a guy to do something on Shabbos that's only prohibited midrabbanan is mutter but makam mitzvah. So this was a makam mitzvah to eat Suda Shamas. So Rabbi Soloveitchik came in rarely. He came in once every 2 months or something like that. So one of the members of the family told me many years ago, their impression clearly was that if Rabbi Soloveitchik would have to do it every Shabbos, he wouldn't do it. That's a kula. Shavuos to Shavuos makam mitzvah is a kula, an emergency heter. But you don't, l'chatchil, you don't buy an apartment on the 26th floor that every single Shabbos is going to have to use the kula of Shavuos to Shavuos makam mitzvah. There are certain kulas that are supposed to be reserved for Shas HaTchak. Take for example, we have a din, if Shefer Chazashmaltz falls into the pot of soup, so it's bottled b'shishim. Are you allowed to mix it in l'chatchil a little b'chazashmaltz? So that's the din, aim about the nisa l'chatchil, you're not allowed to. When you learn your Yeridea, so they quote a machlokes, whether that prohibition is a din deraisa, a din derabbanan. We assume it's only a din derabbanan. But that's when it's lach balach. What if it's yavish b'yavish? And then Rav Nosson Adler is quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, the Pizchei Tshuva, and they quote the Ra'o and the Berak HaBayis, right? It's like that. They think that sometimes they mevat anis l'chatchil is a din deraisa, an emergency heter, and you're going to use it, shalob makam emergency, so that's that could be that that's anis deraisa. A lot of times we have another klal with respect to dinim derabbanan. If you have a big Shas HaTchak, and there's a machloites yochid v'rabim, so we usually paskin in Parshas Mishpatim, yesterday said, it says Acharab l'hatas, you follow the majority opinion. So what happens if the whole issue that you're dealing with is only an issue derabbanan, and there's a lenient opinion, and it's a big Shas HaTchak? So the Gemara has that in some cases, we would say, with a stretch, sveka de rabbanu kul, it's not really a suffix. Suffix is when it's 50-50. If it's a machlekes, 90% of the poskim say one way, 10% say the other way, that's not a real suffix. But the Gemara has a klal, b'shas hatchak, by dinim de rabbanon, there's room to be mekel because we hold that elu v'elu di v'likim chayim. So that's why you can be mekel. So some people will see, oh, we were mekel over there, so you can mekel even when there's no shas hatak. No, it's a special kula, only for shas hatak. We have certain kulas that were only intended to be b'shas hatak. A little over 100 years ago, in Vilna, there were two brothers who were both geniuses. One was Rav Shlomo of Vilna, he was the magia on the Vilna Shas. One of his grandsons used to teach in yeshiva when I was a student, Rabbi Markelis. So he said the family tradition has it that Rav Shlomo of Vilna corrected the galleys when they were printing the Vilna Shas. He didn't check against another Gemara. He knew every word, every letter, balpe, in the Gemara, Rashi, and Tosfos, and he corrected it from memory. That's quite a stunt. That's what I had on. That's why every so often there's a misprint in the Vilna Shas that doesn't exist, that doesn't appear any other edition of the Gemara, and it's a misprint that only a Litvak would make such a mistake. In Rashi, every 50 blot in Rashi, you'll have a Shin instead of a Samach, or a Samach instead of a Shin. Because the Mitvak, the Litvaks mispronounce Beish Medris, instead of saying Beish Medrish, they say Beish Medris. They switch up the Shins and the Samachs. So every so often, every 50 blot, there's a mistake in Rashi, a misprint. By now, they took all the Vilna Shas and they corrected the Shins and the Samachs, so you won't find them anymore. But in the old Vilna Shas, my father had an old Vilna Shas. He bought, when he came to America, he bought the Vilna Shas, cost him a fortune of money. So you have these mistakes there. So that was Rabbi Shlomo of Vilna was the Magia. And his older brother was Rabbi Tzal of Vilna. He apparently was the super genius in the family. Shlomo of Vilna was just a genius. Everything he writes is sheer genius. And his older brother was supposed to be a bigger genius. So Rabbi Shlomo of Vilna, Rabbi Tzal of Vilna, wrote a little sefer, and he called it Reishis Bikurim. They were Kohanim. So he calls it Reishis. This is the first sefer. Unfortunately, that's the only sefer we had by him. The Reishis Bikurim. So he once visited Trieste in Italy, and he was a Kohen, and they duchen every day there in Italy. The Sfardim, they duchen every day. So they're mechabed him, that he should duchen. So he said, what do you mean mechabed me? Everybody's going to duchen. He said, no. Their minig is that whoever is the most becovered Dika Kohen says the bracha, and he says, and the others are Yotze, which are Me'akoina. They just stand there, and the one. So he thought, where'd they get this one from? Where'd they get this minute from? So he writes in his Sefer, Reishis Bikurim, it's an often a Mishnah in Megillah. There's a Mishnah Megillah, but no one explains what's going on. It says, I forgot already the details, that in the days of the Tanoim, it was a Bizoyan to get mafta. Today, people, they'll kill each other to get mafta. A person will run from one shul to the other every week, or daven in a different shul in order to get mafta every other week. One week he gets mafta because he has yahrzeit for his father, next week he has yahrzeit for his uncle, next week he has yahrzeit for his grandmother. Every week he has yahrzeit. He has to be mafta. In the days of the Tanaim, it was a bizoin. Like in some shuls, it's a big bizoin to get chamishi. Chamishi a bizoin. No. So the Mishnah says, whoever agrees to take mafta, you have to give him a booby prize, because he agreed to take the bizoin de kaliyah. So if he's a kohen, he should duchen. What do you mean? He's a kohen, everybody duchen. So he said, oh, you see in the Mishnah that was the practice in the days of the Tanaim. They picked one kohen, whom they felt we have to be mafias him. He agreed to take mafta, that was a bizoin in the days of the Tanaim. I don't know why it was a bizoin. And so he thinks that it's a very beautiful minig, and the minig has roots in the Mishnah. So after he printed the Sefer, so he pointed out that's not the reason for the minig. We don't know pshat in the Mishnah. The minig was a different story. They had people from families. The family started off as Kohanim, but some of the Kohanim married Grushas. So the children were all Chalolim, so they can't duchen. So instead of making a whole fight and telling them you can't get the first Aliyah, If a non-Kohen gets the first Aliyah, at least he didn't say a Baruch Levatola. The first Kohen, the first Aliyah is supposed to be a Kohen, second Aliyah is supposed to be a Levi, and then you give Israel. But if a non-Kohen takes the Aliyah, at least there's no Baruch Levatola. Here, if you have a Kohen who's a Cholo, you're going to say a Shekinashani, because it's going to be a Baruch Levatola. And a non-Kohen, the Gemara seems to say, a non-Kohen is not permitted. Hazar ho'ele leduchen is over be'eser. A non-Kohen is going to duchen is a violation of the din. Because of Aruch, only Kohanim are allowed to duchen, Israelim are not allowed to duchen. So the Rabbanim felt they can't fight with the Kohanim. They're not going to declare that they're Halolim and so on. So they let them get the first aliyah, but by duchening, they put their foot down. So they said, only one person should say the duchening, one who is a vaday kohen should say the bracha and the duchening, the other should be yotzei v'shemei kohen. It's a question whether it can be yotzei v'shemei kohen. A lot of times we're faced with a situation. I remember for around 5 years I was the rabbi in a branch of the Breuer's community in Paramus. So every year they have Breuer's have their own minhagim. So every year I had to go visit Rabbi Schwab and discuss with him what's the minhag, this, that, the other, every year. So I used to go usually Shabbos Chol HaMoed Sukkos, used to go visit him. We used to discuss all the issues that came up. So on one occasion he asks me, do I know this fellow? There's a Lubavitcher fellow. At that time he was a young man. Now he's already an old man. So a Lubavitcher fellow put out a sefer about shaving, recommending that you shouldn't use an electric shaver, and he wrote a whole sefer. So Rabbi Moshe Feinstein did not give a haskama to the sefer. Moshe Feinstein hold that it's mutter to shave with an electric shaver. So he refused to give a haskama. But many other rabbanim gave a haskama. So the fellow who put out that sefer put out another sefer recommending that you shouldn't wear a sheitel, you should cover your hair, the married women should cover their hair with a tichel, with a hat, instead of a sheitel. So he asked Rabbi Schwab for a haskama. So he said to me, do I know who the fellow is? So I said, he's a single bacher and he's learning it. I didn't finish the sentence. I said, of course he's single. Which Meshuggah girl is going to want to marry him? He said, you're not allowed to wear a sheitel. He says to me, look here, young man. When you go into the rabbinate, you have to learn to live with certain kulas. If you're going to be machma on everything, if you're going to be machmah that the women can wear a sheitel, have to cover their hair with a hat, the end will be that they won't cover their hair at all. Better is to tell them they should wear a sheitel. You have to learn to live with certain kulas. So it depends under the circumstance. A lot of times the rabbanim will recommend a certain kula, but under these circumstances they recommend it. It's not always, we don't always recommend that they should be makom. When Baron Kotler first founded the Lakewood Yeshiva, so one of the prominent rabbonim at that time asked him, he took in boys who were not cut out to be in chinuch. And he had them, instead of them going to university and getting a job, making a panasa, so they're the best years of their life. They were sitting and learning. They weren't cut out. They didn't go into chinuch. They didn't go into rabbonim. So what did they do? So someone went into diamonds and other things. So people there, one of the prominent rabbonim, confronted Rabbi Baron Kotler, he said, you're ruining some of these boys. You're ruining them for life. They won't be able to go into learning a rabbanu. They won't be able to make a panasa. So Rabbi Baron Kotler said that, look, sometimes when a person is bisakana, sometimes they'll have to break his ribs in order to get him back to restore his health. So in America, he considers it the whole Jewish community is in a sick situation. Hardly anybody's learning Torah. He says, we're going to have to break ribs now. We're going to have to break ribs. We're going to have to ruin a couple of people. They won't be able to make a normal panasa until everything straightens out. But it does mean that everybody should go learn in a kollel if they're not cut out for rabbonus al-chinuch. Not cut out, sandisht is nisht. So go to another field, make a panasa in some other way. Rabbi Baron Kotler never meant it, that it should be l'duris. A lot of things that were instituted in Melechatchila because we were facing a dilemma, because it was a Shas HaTak and you rely on a Shittas HaYochid, or because a Kilkel will come out, whatever. Different considerations, why they introduce certain kulas. That's what Rabbi Hirsch said. You have to investigate every minig and every psak also. You have to investigate every psak, the Rabbonim in every generation. I have to investigate, does it really make sense to continue with that psak? Sometimes no one's noticing the situation changed so much that the din is the shaila is no longer the same shaila, and the mele it's a different psak. A lot of times like that. Ribbono shel Olam should give koyach to the young talmidei chachamim who are going to take over the leadership in the next generation. They're going to have to work on a lot of shailas. New shailas are coming up every day that no one ever heard of before because of technological advances. A lot of things are different. They're going to have to reopen up all the cases, all the psokim that we had, all the generations, are they still the same now? Or maybe the situation is so different. The halacha doesn't change, but the shailas change. It's a different shaila. If it's one little detail is different, a lot of times the whole psak is different. Many of Rav Moshe Feinstein's tshuvas are like that. We know what the din is in the Gemara and Shulchan Aruch. Does the din still apply bizman hazeh? Because times are so different. So many times he says, yeah, it's a different world we live in, it's a different shot, a different shul, different psak. The Baruch Hashem should give guidance to the young and Talmid Chacham, they're going to have to work on all the shilas. Thank you very much.